supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Late today, a Philadelphia jury found all defendants liable in the civil trial stemming from the deadly 2013 Center City, Philadelphia building collapse. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The defendants include Richard Basciano, owner of the building that fell, various employees of his, and the Salvation Army, which owned the thrift store next door where victims were trapped and killed. Six people died in the botched demolition. 13 were injured. Previously, a contractor working for Basciano was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter for his role. An equipment operator pleaded guilty to the same charge. These were the only two charged criminally. How much today's defendants will have to pay in damages will be determined in the next phase of the trial. The Allentown family, whose Syrian family was detained and deported at Philadelphia International Airport Saturday, is suing President Donald Trump. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports that the lawsuit asks that the visas for the six Syrians be reinstated and that the federal government pay for their return trip.
A group of Philly civil rights attorneys filed the suit on the Asalis' behalf. The suit claims that the Damascus craftsmen, their wives and children, had their basic due process rights violated by Trump's executive order. Jonathan Feinberg's part of their legal team.
The fact that they went through this vetting process for such a substantial period of time and happened to arrive here the day after the executive order issued is really quite remarkable and speaks to the viciousness of this executive order.
Joey Asali and his family in Syria are Orthodox Christians.
We never believed that in any way that our family, who are devout and faithful Christians, would be subject to this so-called Muslim ban. It's disrespectful and it's a disgrace to this nation.
Asali's a student at Temple University. He says in November he didn't back either major presidential candidate. And now he's not just upset with the president.
You can't direct all the anger and resentment towards him. The blame lies with the people who support this, the people who still believe that this is the right to do to people.
Judges in four other states have stopped the enforcement of parts of Trump's executive orders on immigration. But this lawsuit is focused just on the Asalis. Attorney Feinberg says a case testing the legal questions under the order will eventually provide nationwide guidance. Until then, though, these fights will go down case by case. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf wants the next state budget to provide $10 million to help first responders stop drug overdoses. Speaking in Norristown today, Wolf proposed $10 million for the life-saving medication naloxone, which can stop opioid overdose. Wolf says the proposal is only the first step in successfully combating addiction.
And if we do the right thing and have the right resources from Harrisburg and at the local level, we have enough beds, we will make sure that person gets a warm handoff from that overdose to something that is the beginning of a treatment regime that brings that person back to a life that makes all of us proud.
The administration says the $10 million would be enough to ensure every police department in the state has the drug or can get doses to replace ones used to save someone's life. If approved, money would come through the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency. Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection investigated more than 9,000 public complaints thought to be related to oil and gas drilling over the past 12 years. Around half of those complaints were related to private drinking water wells. Though as State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports, the state confirmed actual contamination only a fraction of those cases.
Data related to water complaints was made public for the first time through a right-to-know request by the watchdog website Public Herald. It shows a large gap between the number of water contamination claims and confirmed cases. The Department of Environmental Protection investigated more than 4,000 incidents reported by private water well owners between 2004 and 2016. The agency found just 7% of those complaints were caused by gas drilling activity. Rob Jackson is a Stanford University professor who researches gas drilling and water impacts. Jackson says in many cases, the well water is already contaminated. And other things like road salt, agricultural runoff, and leaking septic systems can pollute well water. But Jackson also says, even in the cases where gas drilling may be the culprit, it's difficult to prove.
One thing to keep in mind is that the bar is really high. If there's any doubt about the cause of poor water quality, the DEP is not going to rule against the industry because the burden of proof falls on the homeowner to show cause and effect from the drilling activity.
Jackson says unless there is a history of water tests showing before and after changes to water quality, it's almost impossible to make the link.
That's why you see most of these people unsatisfied about the outcome of these reviews, but unable to show that the drilling caused their problem.
The Department of Environmental Protection says the database shows that the agency investigates every complaint and works to resolve them quickly. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Ahead at 8 this evening, WHYY will provide live coverage from the White House, where President Donald Trump is expected to announce his selection to fill the opening on the 9-member Supreme Court. Let's get perspective from Earl Maltz, distinguished professor at Rutgers University School of Law, Camden Campus. Professor Maltz, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks for having me.
The picks at this point are winnowed down from 21 to 2, and one of the two has a Philadelphia presence. Why don't we start with him? Tell us what you know about Judge Hardiman.
Well, he's known as, among most people, as a reliable conservative judge. He has some, among his published opinions, that he has been a strong supporter of gun rights, that he has been a supporter of the rights of conservative Christians under certain circumstances to read religious materials in school.
Is reliable synonymous with predictable?
I think that most people believe that his views would be generally in accord with conservative constitutional jurisprudence.
In a way that perhaps current Justice Anthony Kennedy is less reliable?
Yes. For some people, that is, in fact, one of the issues about Judge Hardiman. He has not, as far as I know, publicly supported overruling Roe versus Wade. I suppose, depending on one's perspective, that could be might be the good news or the bad news. The good news from the perspective of the Trump administration, perhaps, is that might make him less vulnerable to a filibuster. The bad news from the perspective of some conservative people might be that they feel they got burned on Anthony Kennedy.
As you bring up filibuster, then let's talk about the process. And there is this potential of the so-called nuclear option, whereby it would not require 60 senators to confirm, but merely 50 plus one.
Possibility of filibusters for all other kinds of appointments was removed the last time the Democrats controlled the Senate. Filibusters of Supreme Court nominations have actually been relatively rare, if one thinks about it. The question from the Democrats' perspective is, if you are going to filibuster, do you want to filibuster this one, or do you want to hold your fire for a prospective next one?
So this one is obviously filling the seat of the late Justice Antonin Scalia, and as such will maintain that previous order, as it were, 5-4 conservative liberal.
That's actually kind of an interesting question, because Justice Scalia, in a variety of cases, because of his originalist philosophy, actually in some kinds of criminal procedure cases, wrote a number of opinions that were actually, might be considered, in political terms, progressive, because of his belief in original meaning.
Thomas Hardiman is 51 years young and, like Scalia, would likely serve for decades on the court, and yet he's older than the other top pick, 49-year-old Neil Gorsuch from Colorado. Gorsuch is, I've heard, much closer to a Scalia acolyte in terms of his interpretation, as you cite, originalism.
That's my understanding as well. At least, again, publicly.
You've implied that perhaps the bigger battle to come would be a subsequent nominee of a Trump administration. And yes, the aforementioned Anthony Kennedy is 80, Ruth Bader Ginsburg 84, Stephen Breyer is about to turn 79. How might that very much change the composition of the court?
Assuming that President Trump appointed a person who is committed to conservative or originalist beliefs, and that person was affirmed, what we would have actually for, I think, the very first time is a court where there was a reliable majority of people who were consistently conservative. That could have a big impact for 10 to 20 years. Even assuming the Democrats took full control of the government in 2020, they might face a court that was dominated by justices who were willing to strike down some of the Democratic agenda.
Professor Maltz, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
All right. Have a good day.
Earl Maltz, distinguished professor at Rutgers University School of Law, Camden Campus. At 6:16, let's check the forecast for this evening. Mostly cloudy skies, falling back to 46 degrees overnight. Tomorrow, remaining overcast, Wednesday's high 46. Thursday, sunshine returns up to 40 degrees. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's take a music break. Diane Monroe is a Philadelphia-based violinist who explores a wide range of music, touring and recording extensively with jazz groups and chamber music ensembles. Here she is with her own quartet with a piece entitled Groovin' Roots. Thank you. violinist Diane Monroe with her quartet of Tony Maselli on vibes, Tony Marino on bass, and percussionist Todd Eisler. We heard Groovin' Roots. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream. Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. In office for less than 2 weeks, President Donald Trump is already seeking to usher in a new era for American energy companies. He has started to roll back efforts to combat climate change and is pushing for federal approval of controversial new infrastructure projects, such as the Keystone XL and Dakota Access oil pipelines. In the first report of a two-part series, State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick looks at how the oil and gas industry is responding to a warmer welcome from Washington.
Perhaps not surprisingly, President Trump sounds a lot like candidate Trump. Here he is talking to oil and gas executives in Pittsburgh last fall.
The shale energy revolution will unleash massive wealth for American workers and their families.
With that in mind, on day one in office, the Trump administration deleted information on climate change from the White House's official website and posted a new America First energy plan, which calls for rolling back environmental regulations and promoting the further development of fossil fuels, particularly the nation's shale oil and gas. This is good news to people like David Spiegelmeyer, who heads the Marcellus Shale Coalition, a trade group representing natural gas producers.
We're optimistic because we believe that free market enterprise will work, that energy options won't be taken off the table, that all the sources of energy will be given an opportunity to compete.
But the oil and gas industry isn't jumping for joy quite yet, because a lot of what they do is regulated at the state level. As Spiegelmeyer points out, Trump may seek to eliminate some federal regulations, but Governor Tom Wolf, a Democrat, is forging ahead with new ones.
We don't see a lot of change from that perspective.
For example, the Wolf administration is working on new rules to combat methane leaks from oil and gas sites. It's a potent greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change. Stephanie Wissman of the Associated Petroleum Industries of Pennsylvania is among the lobbyists in Harrisburg working to fight those new state rules.
Make no mistake, you know, we understand and support common sense regulation. What we have a problem with is duplicative and expensive regulation.
And that could keep coming from the states, whether Trump likes it or not.
He's not going to change that per se. I think longer term, it's just a positive supporter in Washington.
Joseph Lundy is the chief financial officer for Cleveland Brothers Equipment. It's the authorized Caterpillar dealer for Pennsylvania and supplies a lot of the heavy machinery used in constructing pipelines. He points to a couple recent state-level problems his company's faced. One is the Mariner East 2 project, a natural gas liquids pipeline planned to run across southern Pennsylvania. Construction for that has been pushed back because state environmental regulators say the permit applications are full of problems, so they haven't given approval yet.
We invested well over $200 million in equipment that just sat that we anticipate being put to use. And so we're trying to scramble as to how do you manage that when there's no revenue for this equipment that you thought you were going to generate.
Likewise, Lundy says New York State's decision last year to deny water crossing permits to another gas pipeline known as the Constitution has temporarily halted that project, even though it was approved by the federal government.
So again, that impacted our ability to mobilize the big investment of equipment that we brought in to get started on that project. And still, that's in the courts now.
And big questions remain about how exactly Trump's America First policies will play out. For example, could they hinder fossil fuel exports? Case in point is Mexico, which has bought more than half of all U.S. natural gas exports over the past 2 years. If Trump follows through on threats to levy a heavy tax on Mexican goods, it could result in a retaliation from across the border. Michael Frederick is with Dominion Energy, a company that's finishing up a multi-billion-dollar terminal along the Chesapeake Bay to export natural gas. He recently spoke at an industry conference in Pittsburgh. When asked about Trump, Frederick didn't want to weigh in on his expectations of the new administration. But choosing his words very carefully, he did say that the U.S. needs to look at the big picture.
One of the things we have to wrestle with, any way you look at it, is it takes a long time to build infrastructure projects. So I think one of the things that we need to improve upon is, in my opinion, would be, first off, a more comprehensive energy policy.
It's fair to say there is optimism and some angst as fossil fuel companies wait and see, along with everyone else, how Trump follows through on his promises to boost American energy. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Tomorrow evening, we'll examine how environmentalists are gearing up to take on the Trump administration. Finally, this evening, college students may feel the spring semester has barely gotten underway, but school administrators are already finalizing their plans for graduation. University of Pennsylvania President Amy Gutman announced today that New Jersey U.S. Senator Cory Booker will speak at Penn's commencement this spring. A former Rhodes Scholar, Booker attended Stanford University on a football scholarship. He moved to Newark after getting a law degree from Yale. In 1998, he won election to the city council at the age of 29. In 2006, he became mayor. In an announcement today, Gutman said Booker's service as a U.S. senator and former mayor of Newark, quote, embodies Penn's fundamental values of civic engagement, applying one's intellect and energy to better the world. School officials say Booker will also receive an honorary Doctor of Laws degree, and he'll be in good company. WHYY's own Terry Gross will receive a Doctor of Humane Letters at the May 15th ceremony. Congratulations to Terry and the entire Fresh Air staff. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.